Thank you for joining us again. This is a continuation of the previous episode. As always, here's your host, Nikesh Gosalia.
And speaking of operations, we know that in the last maybe few years, the number of journal submissions has skyrocketed. And this is especially true in the biomedical sciences. What advice would you offer a journal that's getting way more submissions than they would have expected? And what kind of short-term and long-term solutions are available?
Yeah, my personal thoughts on this is that the way to maintain quality at scale is to involve technology, AI, machine learning, all these tools that can really make quick assessment on a large number of submissions without compromising on all the quality checks that should be done to validate the papers. The problem is, as you say, you know, it's the sudden start of more submissions. And if a journal is getting so many more submissions than they expected, they tend to do two things. Either they will start rejecting a lot more because they don't have the capacity or time to handle the papers, which is unfortunate because that means some good research will be delayed in getting published. It wastes time and effort for the authors, obviously. Or the other thing they might do, the journal might minimize the checks and any more in-depth verification of the submissions to be able to cope with the volume. And so neither of these short-term approaches are ideal. One will be used, but they're not ideal. I think the best option, if the journals can afford it, is really to hire a bit more additional help in the short term to maintain the validation and recruit more editors to be able to distribute the volume. And if this can help short term, then they can work on adapting to what I believe is the best long-term solution in finding the tools, the technology, and the right platform that can really help them then handle the volumes with less manual work.
And because you mentioned AI, and that fits in beautifully with, you know, what I want to talk about next, I know that, you know, you've been involved in developing an AI solution. In fact, in your own personal capacity, I remember, Marie, when we spoke, I think first time, probably a few years back, 4 or 5 years back, you know, you were one of the first few people I heard talking so passionately about AI and, you know, how AI can help us simplify things, you know, improve efficiencies, maybe focus on the high-end tasks and you know, get rid of the manual tasks. But I know that, you know, Frontiers has been developing an AI solution for peer review. In your opinion, do you think AI can help promote research integrity? And if yes, then how so? And in terms of the actual implementation, how would it fit into an actual journal's workflow?
Yes, absolutely. I think the AI can help. The classic example I like to give to everybody to illustrate this is the ethical issue of plagiarism, for people to really visualize what AI can do. Although this one is not strictly AI at the moment, it's more technological automation. But it used to be very difficult to detect plagiarism with just an editor's human brain looking at citations, being the reference for what might have been published elsewhere. But with plagiarism software that can cross-check texts with millions of other texts from various sources all at the same time, it goes beyond what one or a few even humans could achieve. And now if you add AI to this automation, you can have a software that not only detects exact reuse of text, but it can also detect similarity in a broader way to prevent the reuse of text without copy-pasting. It can be a very similar idea without giving credit or citing the original research and trying to publish the same things twice. So AI can really help on that research integrity issue in particular. I also mentioned issues with images earlier and tools to help detect manipulated images. This is also something where AI helps catch misconduct a lot with algorithms that you can train to detect any weird edits or pixels that are moved in a figure. And something that, again, even a trained specialist of research integrity would have a hard time finding in an image. So I think at the point where we are with tools to make fraud that become more and more sophisticated, even using AI to create fake manuscripts by taking pieces of text from different manuscripts and putting them together, we also have to fight back from our side with AI tools of our own. And regarding where that fits in a journal workflow, I think what's good about AI and automation is that it can also be integrated virtually anywhere in a journal workflow. You just have to be clever about how you do that to maintain the efficiency, as we discussed earlier, and not create additional bottlenecks or more work for the journal and the editors, because otherwise they're not going to want to implement this. So for example, with plagiarism, ideally, this is checked directly at submission. So no need to waste the time of an editor or reviewers if a paper is a copy of something already published. It should just be rejected. But then some other ethical checks can or actually should be done at other moments in the workflow. So typically, if we want to look at conflicts of interest, potential conflicts between authors, editors, and reviewer, by looking at their affiliations, their past co-publications, this can only be done, obviously, once you have the reviewers. And so this is a verification that comes later in the life cycle of the manuscript during peer review. So we found that the use of AI can really help the teams focus on specific ethical issues when they are detected, so at the right time during the review process. And overall, then it saves time for all the participants in the peer review, and it allows to maintain really high level of ethical standards.
And you know that the idea of using AI for something like peer review is bound to raise a few eyebrows. Yet you and your colleagues at Frontiers managed to develop and implement an AI review assistant. So how did you convince different journals at Frontiers to adopt it?
That's very true. There's often, by default, a level of suspicion about the use of AI. And, you know, validly so, as there are limits to what AI can do, how it's trained, or limits to what should be trusted, entrusted to an AI, as the AI is not accountable, but the humans are. And I actually had last year a great panel discussion with Michel Shaw, the CTO of Cactus Communications, and Ibo van der Poel, who's a professor of ethics, philosophy, and technology at TU Delft, on this subject and on AI and decision-making and publishing, about the opportunities of AI, the limitations, and the ethical considerations of using it, and also the distinction between simple automation and actually different types of AI. And so for AI in publishing, like the adoption of AI in any business, one of the key elements is trust. We have to trust in the results. And I think there's a need for limitations on the types of decisions that the AI is allowed to make. So at Frontiers specifically, for the adoption of our AI review assistant called Aira, it was a very gradual process. We built each AI quality check individually with internal teams texting them, then using them in a status that we referred to literally as untrusted, providing feedback then to the algorithm to learn and improve. And when we saw that the results were good and the teams started trusting the results of the check, we felt convinced in the benefits and we started being comfortable in using them with editors and with more journals. And we built the AI so that we can continue to give feedback to it and can continue to learn over time based on the feedback provided by the users. So that is also a way to promote trust. And then, as I mentioned, the whole aspect of decision-making and transparency there is very important. In the case of Aira, the AI analyzes data and information, and then it either provides recommendations for a human specialist to look at, an editor, or it performs a number of actions, typically sending an email. But these actions are limited to things that will not take a final decision on the publication of a manuscript. Aira will not accept or reject. And we've seen that it's important to be clear on where the AI is used. That's the transparency aspect, and which processes it's used and which recommendations it's providing. And actually, the European Commission had a high-level expert group on artificial intelligence, and they published very valuable ethics guidelines on trustworthy AI. We've also been influenced by that and recently published with COPE, the Committee on Publication Ethics, a document with our recommendations on the ethical use of AI for decision-making in publishing. And so for those of you listeners who would be interested to read more about this fascinating subjects, you can look at these resources.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Marie. And just talking about adoption, having been involved in this process where, you know, AI can enable and support and help us, over the last 4 or 5 years, have you seen increased awareness, increased adoption in general by industry, by senior decision makers? Or do you think there is marginal improvement, but there's a lot more to be done?
I'd say we're somewhere in the middle. I think we're past the first stage where people needed to be convinced of the advantages and the potential benefits. I think we're past that. I think now people do realize there is a need for it. There are strong benefits to it because we have some clear use cases, again, with plagiarism, where it was used and it succeeded really well. So that went a long way into convincing people, journals, publishers, even authors, that this was a good thing. The difficulty right now is to make sure that new big quality checks like this gets validated. And so you have to have publishers or journals that develop new ones and try them. And once they're working, they try to share this and for other people to use it. And we see now different companies are trying to come up with these tools so that they can share it with publishers, including Cactus and Unsilo. And there's other different tools out there. Even with Aira, we try to see, you know, what of these checks could be used externally with other publishers, because there is a need to work in a bit together as publishers to try to solve some of these big cases of research integrity out there.
I agree. I agree with you, Marie. And I mean, this has been very fascinating, and thank you for sharing so many insights. Just top of mind, you know, the way I would kind of like to summarize this. So retractions, clearly, like you mentioned, is not such a big stigma perhaps anymore. People need to talk about it, people need to accept it, and you know, probably not complain about it. At the same time, there are two sides to it. There is the publisher or the society's perspective, and there's the author's perspective as well. I guess the other point being, you know, just having an open mind in using tools, especially as far as, you know, operational efficiency is concerned. It is a tricky balance for sure, but you know, if you have an open mind in terms of using tools, then that definitely helps. And talking about tools and some of the trends that we've seen, you know, AI is more openly being spoken about, is being adopted. Aira is a brilliant example. Some of the tools that, you know, Cactus has developed is a great example. It's very important that we have the right mindset in accepting that it enables us, it helps us to do things and focus maybe on you know, the high quality tasks and not to eliminate tasks or you know, to kind of take away jobs. So clearly, you know, we are seeing that. One final question from my side, Marie. I mean, because there is so much information that is available out there, how do you keep yourself updated with everything that's happening within the industry or the field of research? I'm sure, you know, you are very curious about the field of research in which you did your PhD in. So how do you keep yourself updated?
Interesting. It's a bit of a mix of things. I think there are a few conferences that have gone online now that have been interesting to attend in the last year, where you get a lot of people from all different sides that come together to talk about these issues. The latest was the APE online conference, where you had researchers and publishers and journals and editors. So a bit of a mix where everybody then shares these ideas of what's going on. STHEM have also a lot of nice online courses and conferences that try to keep you up to date with this. I'm lucky because as a member of COPE, I get to hear about a lot of issues firsthand because they're raised in such a broad way. And we have a lot of discussions there. So for me, a lot of my knowledge of the industry comes from sitting on the Council of COPE and attending some of these conferences. Otherwise, one of the good places I've found to learn more about new AI tools that are coming out is basically Archive. A lot of people that are working on AI tools actually post openly their codes or their research on this in archive.org. And so it's a place where I like to look at the papers on AI that are coming out, pointing out the tricky things and potential tools to try to address them.
Thank you. Thank you, Marie. That was very useful. One more thing, and I promise this is the final question, Marie. We've had, I don't know if disruptive is the right word, but we've had, you know, the last 2-3 years have been very different in multiple ways. I mean, the push towards open access, the importance of, you know, measuring impact, and then, of course, you know, the pandemic. What are one or two trends that you think, you know, would be interesting to watch out for as far as our industry is concerned?
I mean, I don't want to say AI again, because, you know, that's what we've talked about the whole time. I think, yeah, the sophistication of fraud is the first thing that comes to mind, both as a person who works on research ethics and AI. It's this whole situation where, as I said, AI can help you have the tools to find fraud and misconduct, but it also helps the other side. It helps anybody who wants to do fraud to do it better. And I think one of the big trends in that is that we find the sharing of information can backfire. So we try to collaborate together as publishers to deal with some of these big issues of fraud in publishing. But then what we found is also the more you share publicly about what you're doing, the more the people doing fraud then learn from what you say you're doing and update their side as well. So we found ourselves in this very tricky position of who to share what with and how much to make sure that you can address these issues in a concerted way without helping fraud become more sophisticated. So I think right now, this is one of the big things that is being discussed between publishers and to keep an eye on what's going to happen. Although, you know, it might not go public what conclusion comes out of this for this exact reason. So it might not be a trend that people can follow on, but it will be one that will play out in the background for sure in the coming years.
Very interesting. Thank you. Thank you, Marie, for being our guest on All Things ICOM. As always, it's been a great pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Nikesh. It was really fun. And thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. You can subscribe to this podcast on all major podcast platforms. Stay tuned for our next episode.
All Things SciComm is brought to you by Science Talks, a science media channel that aims to make science accessible to all. We publish articles, videos, podcasts, and magazines. To read a transcript of this episode or watch it on YouTube, visit sciencetalks.org. Also, write to us with your views, questions, and guest recommendations at contact@sciencetalks.org. Science Talks, bringing science to you.